Welcome back, you horny little rats. It's time to smut up and listen.
Just a reminder for today's episode and all future episodes, our opinions are subjective. We don't advocate for kink shaming or author shaming. This is all in good smutty fun. Enjoy. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/smutupandlisten to listen to the r/smut podcast, where Riley and I will be doing blind reactions every Tuesday to Reddit erotica.
Today's episode trigger warnings are murder and explicit sexual content.
And I have a Spotify comment, and this comes from 50 Shades of Sloane, and it says, "Shh, my show is on. You guys get me through some seriously boring, monotonous hours at work. Love you guys. Stay smutty."
Thanks.
Thank you.
Did you know that you're going to be in this book?
Mentioned.
Just the name.
And this week, we're telling Riley all about Leather and Lark by Bryn Weaver. And stay tuned to the end of the episode if you want to hear our ratings on it.
Oh, yeah, we're switching that up. We're not doing it at the beginning anymore. Mm-hmm.
Lark is our female main character, and she is Sloane's bestie, and she knows all about Sloane's extra activities. And Riley, I know it's been a while. Sloane was the female serial killer of the first book.
I read a summary.
Good.
But Sloane doesn't know about Lark's extracurricular activities.
Lark, what are you doing?
And Lark sure loves the sound of this man's begging. As she taunts her ex-boyfriend, Andrew.
Andrew!
She looks back, realizing everything he did and said was a lie. Behind her back, he was cheating and talking to girls way too young for him, so he's gotta go.
I agree.
Pervert.
Honestly, if I wasn't with Andrew, I think I'd be a misandrist.
Like, you just hate men?
Yeah.
That's fair.
Truly. Sorry to any men listening.
She's creative with getting rid of him as she straps fireworks to his dick. She plays Firework by Katy Perry and lights him off. It explodes, and once it's over, she hears a small moan. She walks up to him, sees that he's still alive, so she just pulls her gun and finishes it. We fast forward, it's Halloween, and Lark got in a small fender bender running another pedo off the road. As she watches his car sink to the bottom of the lake, she thinks this is a much bigger mess than I was anticipating. She calls her stepdad, telling him that all is well, but she needs a company to come clean up her mess that she's made. He is annoyed and unfazed, so this has clearly happened before, and then 3 hours later, someone's pulling up to assist her. She's stumbling a bit from the blood loss due to a cut across her head from the accident, and the cleaning guy says she might have a concussion and will probably need stitches. He then chastises her for calling her daddy to clean up her accidental boo-boo, since it was most likely a drunk driving incident, because pretty girls never pay the price. She doesn't like his tone or his attitude and starts calling him the nickname Budget Batman and tells him to mind his own business because he doesn't know her at all. Then his nice partner shows up and they work to retrieve the body, letting her know that they'll get the vehicle tomorrow night. Budget Batman grabs her and tells her it's time to go. He stuffs her into the trunk of his car as she pleads to not go in there.
What the hell?
He ignores her and takes off. She focuses on calming herself and then uses her knowledge from her stepdad to open the trunk and roll out of the car as soon as he comes to a stop sign. Then she limps her way home. It's 1 year later and Lachlan is tired of living this life. He only wants to be in his leather studio full time, but he's stuck working for Leander, doing all the dirty cleanup and other odd mafia jobs.
Oh, leather. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Leather.
As he watches Leander torture someone, Leander tells him he's on another cleanup and will be for the foreseeable future for ruining the Carvacci contract from the stunt he pulled by shoving the daughter into the trunk.
Yeah. Why would you do that?
Yeah, I'd be like, I'm not working for you. You assaulted my daughter. My sweet, precious baby angel, who's never done anything wrong in her life.
No.
There's nothing wrong with killing pedos. Right? That's what she's doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sick. Yeah.
Lachlan says okay, and then Leander finishes his victim so Lachlan can go to Rowan's second restaurant opening. Rowan opened a second Butcher and Blackbird restaurant.
Oh.
So he's doing very well.
Gordon Ramsay.
But worse,
yeah. But better?
Unless Gordon Ramsay kills people.
Would that make him better?
I mean, he only kills bad people, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's just like a Chef Dexter.
Yeah.
He'd have like pretty like solid alibis though. He'd be like, I was cooking.
Yeah. By cooking, I mean fucking killing bad guys. Get it? Like he's cooking.
Yeah.
They're meeting at Rowan and Sloane's apartment before going to the new restaurant, and when Lachlan arrives, he sees the most beautiful woman ever. He learns it's the famous Lark, Sloane's bestie, and they have really cute, playful banter, and he thinks that something about her is familiar, but he can't place it. After a little bit of flirting, it turns very sensual, and she leans in and just starts kissing him.
Oh, my tongue plunders her mouth. Lark's fist tightens in my shirt. I'm desperate to mold her flesh in my palms, but I settle for laying one hand to the side of her neck instead. The second my palm touches her skin, she whimpers with need. My erection is painful against my zipper as she presses her body against mine. Oh my god. The first time.
Hit it off, right off the bat.
Yeah.
The kiss is amazing, and he pulls away, muttering, and they're Irish, I'm not even going to do the accent, feckin' Christ Jesus, and she freezes.
I can't do it, sorry.
Yeah, no.
Christ Jesus, right?
That's kind of Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah, apologies.
I got school. Or is that Scottish?
I think that's Scottish.
I got school. Wait, is Irish?
They're after me lucky charms, right?
The luck of the Irish.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Feckin' Jesus Christ, me lucky charms.
Yeah, that was good. Great. That was
good. Yeah, I haven't seen Ireland come up on our like top countries for listeners, so I'm not like too worried about it.
Okay, good. Good, good.
I think we're safe.
She asks him to repeat that, and when he does, she pushes him away saying, "Budget Batman."
Oh. He recognized his voice.
Yeah.
Also, Budget Batman, what a shitty nickname.
So I think his voice is like, "Where is she?"
Oh, God.
Now he recognizes her and he calls her Blunder Barbie, and she's furious. He lets her know that she fucked up his night with the whole trunk escape, and she wants to fucking hit him but calms herself. She tells him to fuck off, she'll be nice to him for Rowan and Sloane, but not to talk to her, and then walks away. The Phantom is in Rowan and Sloane's apartment. That's what we know him as, the Phantom.
Okay.
It's a third POV.
Yeah.
Oh.
He's been watching them and biding his time. He looks to the balcony where he watched Lark and Lachlan that night of the restaurant opening and knows those two are exactly how he'll exact revenge.
Dun, dun, dun.
Another year goes by. Lark is at her great Aunt Ethel's mansion, eavesdropping on her parents and their partner, Tremblay. She hears how their associates are being killed off one by one, and they aren't sure who's doing it, but they don't want to leave any stone unturned. They think it might be Leander's men since they ditched him as part of their contract cleanup, so they want to take him out as well. And that includes Lachlan Kane and his brothers, which... Rowan is one of his brothers, so...
Nor...
Gotta go.
Gotta go. They all gotta go. Lark walks away panicking because she doesn't want Sloane or Rowan getting hurt. She finds Ethel in her room as their friend Rose texts her, reminding her about the dress and to bring the supplies for the surprise elopement. Ethel lets her in, gets her the dress, and asks her what's wrong. Lark tries to play it off, but Ethel says she's assuming it's because of the whole Kane brother problem downstairs. And the whole family writes Auntie Ethel off as, like, her mind's going. She has dementia.
Just a batty old lady.
Mm-hmm.
She's cunning. She's, like, listening in on everybody's conversations because they're like, Ethel's fine. She's just over there staring out the window.
But she's listening. She's tuning in.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Ethel tells her that she doesn't think it's Leviathan, which is Leander's business, or Lachlan doing this, and she might have a way to help, which in turn helps Sloane. She asks Lark to sit down. Lachlan is walking Sloane down the aisle to a blubbering Rowan. It's a beautiful ceremony, and they are now celebrating at a tavern. Lachlan is more broody than normal because he promised Sloane he would dance with the maid of honor, aka Lark. Sloane stares daggers at him because he has yet to do it, and then Lark taps him on the shoulder. They dance, they have sarcastic banter, she asks him about his freelance cleanup job and if he's ready to retire from it. He says, yes, but I can't, and you're the reason why. She tells him that she might have a solution. Leander can get both the Corvacci contract back as well as the Montague one, which is her mom's side of the family. He's confused why Leander would want the Montague side since their business is in muffins and baking. And she says, that's the primary, but we also have some weapon smuggling in there.
Oh.
Muffins and guns.
You know.
He says, what's in it for her since he would be the one getting early retirement from this job? She says she would need his help finding out who's killing her parents' business associates.
Almost. What do you mean almost? There's a slight catch. Can't wait to hear this. We need to get married. What?
Yeah.
Oh, I love these storylines where they have to get married. Love that.
He says, no, absolutely not. But she tells him it's the only way to secure his safety and his brother's safety because her parents think that Lachlan is the one doing it and they're not afraid to take out all three brothers to cross their T's and dot their I's. She tells him that he has until the end of the night to decide and then he walks away. Lark is doing a DIY resin coffee table. She's a crafty girl.
Oh.
But there's a little twist. Patrick is completely covered in resin minus his face as he screams at her for being a psycho bitch. She ignores him, continues to tell him her life woes, and lets him in on a little secret. Her new fiance moves in tomorrow and she's really nervous. She figures making the coffee table and taking out a pedo would probably help calm her nerves, but it's not working very well. She says, oh well, and then finishes filling the resin until he's no longer screaming. So she just buried alive this man in a DIY coffee table.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to ask. Is he in the coffee table?
Yeah.
I wonder if you can see him.
No, she's smarter than that.
Do you think it preserves him?
Probably.
Oh.
She has 2 hours until Sloan picks her up, so she finishes her little project and heads upstairs to get ready. Sloan arrives and they head to the courthouse, but Sloan wants to know what the fuck is going on. Her and Lachlan don't like each other, but now all of a sudden they're getting married. But Lark just begs her to actually trust Lark for once and to let her take care of everything. She tells Sloan that she loves her and then they arrive. No one is supposed to be here, but lo and behold, Auntie Ethel somehow knew about it and is holding onto Lachlan's arm, making him laugh. She steps out of the car, wondering how her aunt knew that this was going on. Ethel sees the look on her face and tells her not to worry about it. They get married, they tie the knot, and then her Auntie Ethel hands her her wedding ring from her 50-year marriage to her uncle.
Cute.
Lachlan moves in the next day, and her dog Bentley is super unsure of him. Lachlan watches Lark work on the coffee table, and when she sands down some of the resin, she pauses and then gasps. He rushes over to her, thinking that she is hurt somehow, and she covers the spot, begging him to go get her star-shaped cake tin from the kitchen. The table needs a sparkly black star. In this spot, she can't move to go get it. He's got to go get it.
Oh, can you see his dead body?
He says, okay, but then he smells something absolutely disgusting. Lark tells him that Bentley farted, but to please hurry up. She blames this decomposing body on a dog.
Poor dog.
He does as she says, and she finishes the table. She tells him that they need to meet her parents soon, and at some point she needs to meet Leander to give him the contracts. He tells her that's fine, but when they meet his boss, the contracts need to be ready to go, already signed on her end, like, so no changes are going to be made. She says, okay, that's doable, and then asks for him to help her put the coffee table upstairs. They walk this heavy-ass coffee table to the elevator, but she's nervous because she doesn't like the elevator. He tells her it's fine, and they load everything up, but it's not fine. The elevator stops, and the lights go out. So now they're trapped in the elevator.
Fuck no.
She panics and falls to the floor, huddling in a corner with Bentley. Lachlan knows in this moment that there's something super significant about this, and he remembers a couple years ago when he subjected her to a small, tight, dark space, aka his trunk. And he's like, wow, I really fucked something up with that. Clearly this girl has issues with small, dark spaces.
Yeah, I feel like most people would.
He tells her that he can fix the elevator, but she either stays with the dog or the dog stays alone. She decides that she's going to stay with Bentley and calls Rose to distract herself. Once he has it fixed, they're back in the apartment. She excuses herself, saying that she needs to be alone, and then he doesn't see her for the rest of the night.
Lachlan is hella curious about Lark's claustrophobia. He's also noticed, since they've now lived together for all of 2 days, that she's obviously struggling with something. He, like, has not seen her sleep at all. She's been awake for, like, 48 hours. If anything, she'll take, like, a 15-minute nap and then, like, wake up.
She's on coke.
Yeah.
Drugs.
Coked out.
Oh my god, not being able to sleep like that is like my absolute like worst fear. Oh my god.
Yeah. Have you heard about the fatal insomnia?
Yeah. That is so scary. I'd be like, get me a gun.
You just don't sleep until you die?
Yeah, no. Fucking kill me.
Mm-hmm.
Lachlan swallows his pride and reaches out to his favorite sister-in-law, Sloane. And he's like, all right, I need your help. I want to invite Lark out to lunch to get to know her, but she probably won't say yes unless you and Rowan are there too. And Sloane is on cloud nine. She's immediately like, yes, 2 p.m., double date. Let's do it. On the double date, Lachlan is literally like psychoanalyzing every single thing Lark is doing. And although she's putting up an amazing front, he can tell that she's absolutely run into the ground with exhaustion. And it makes his little heart feel weird and tight. And he's like, what's this feeling?
love.
Just when he's at his max uncomfiness, things get worse. Some stupid bitch named Claire comes up. She's hitting on Lachlan in front of everyone, even after he said that Lark was his wife. And she laughs at everyone's face and was like, damn, a lot has changed from Halloween 2 years ago. And then tells him that they can catch up properly in private later.
Yeah, 2 years ago, you stupid bitch.
The way I would go. Insane. Absolutely wild. I'd go crazy. I'd climb the walls.
Once Claire leaves, Lark was like, okay, well, this has been fun. See ya, bye. And Rowan and Sloane were both like, dude, if you don't go get your wife, you're going to be bailing her out of jail because she's about to kill that bitch.
And rightfully so.
But Lachlan's like, no, innocent Lark. She wouldn't hurt a fly. She puts glitter on everything. And Sloane was like, I'm going to hold your hand while I tell you this. She is not as innocent as she looks. She's vengeful. She'll put sparkles and wear a smile while she gets her revenge. Go get her. When Lark found out that her ex cheated on her with her friend, she broke into her friend's house and gorilla glued cheating bitch on her face in sequins. And then 2 months later, killed Andrew, which is how the story began.
Nice.
Lachlan literally sprints after her and finds her creeping through an alleyway after Claire. And he grabs her and they do like a little tussle back and forth. And Lachlan's like, Pookie girl, talk to me. Like, what is this about? Because like, you kind of hate me. So why are you acting like this? And when the book started, when she called him Budget Batman, it was on Halloween. So Halloween 2 years ago is when he put her in the trunk and she's like, your horrible mood and why you treated me like that was because of that bitch. You were mad that you had to leave her. And he's like, no, I needed to go back there for my brother because Claire broke his fucking heart. They were dated for years. He proposed. She said no. And that Halloween party was the first time they saw each other. And he was like so fucked up. And he was just in a bad mood because he was worried about his brother. Claire was insinuating something else because she's a bitch. And then she's like, okay. And then just like slips out from his grasp and then just like walks away. She's like, glad we cleared that up. Thanks.
Relatable. Bye. I get it. Yeah.
As she walks away, Lachlan has a revelation of some sort, and he's like, wait, I really need to start looking into Lark Montague and who she is, because he should have done this when they first got engaged, but he didn't, because he thought she was innocent. When Lachlan enters their apartment, he doesn't just enter it, he studies it. He looks through the whole house, determined to find something that could point out that there's something wrong with her. And on a line of posters on the wall, he looks behind each one and he finds a hole in the drywall. And what he finds, he has no logical explanation for. By the time she comes home, he's like, hey, we really need to talk. And she's like, I don't really want to talk about Claire. No thanks. And he's like, do you want to explain to me what these are? And he's holding piles of her serial killer trophies. A ring finger in a mason jar, human teeth, a coaster made out of human skin.
Ew.
She's a DIY girly.
And they all have glitter on them.
Yeah, all of the jars have glitter in them.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
He's holding the mason jar with the ring finger. He just knew that it meant something extra special. And he wanted to open it up to look at the signet ring, but she interrupts him and she's like, shake it. And he's like, what? And she's like, it's a snow globe. Like, she's like crazy. He asks her how many people she's killed and she's like, 8. No, wait, definitely 9. But then there was that one guy who died in the hospital 4 days later. So I guess 10.
Well, they deserve it.
Yeah. And she's making art. So like
crafts. Yeah.
When he asked her why, she told him so no one she loves has to do it for her ever again. Because in the first book, Sloane killed for her. And she's like, never again. Before he could ask her about the boarding school incident, she says, okay, gotta go. And then she leaves. Lark and Lachlan kind of have like a vulnerable moment with each other the next day. He takes her dog out while she's sleeping and to like let her sleep some more. And he's like starting to like make attempts to like make her coffee and try to get her to open up. He's just trying to get to know her more. He talks to her about random things and they both find that they have a lot more in common than they initially thought. They both go to pick up her Aunt Ethel from the assisted living home she's at now. And Auntie says, ready to stir up some shit. It's time to finally let the family know that you guys are married.
Woo!
The family was stunned and relentlessly asked questions. And then the questions turned to Lachlan, and Lark is absorbing all the details she can. And he's clearly uncomfortable about talking about his parents. Once they feel like things are safe, Auntie Ethel walks in and she's like, okay, time to address the elephant in the room. The Leviathan contract. She just like loves the tea and making drama.
She loves like the vibe of it. And I get it. I love a little drama.
Lark's mom says that the Montague contract will not be happening. She won't sign anything off. And Auntie Ethel says no need to sign anything because she has appointed Lark as chief security officer, not Lark's mom, because Auntie Ethel's the head honcho, the head bitch in charge of everything, and she's like really sick and she's dying. So when she passes, they all assumed that everything, like all the power, would go to her mom, but she put Lark in charge of everything. So now the whole family thinks that this is like a whole ruse to get power. No one actually thinks that they're really married. To seal the deal, she drops her driver's license with her new last name on the table, saying that she's officially now Lark Kane. And for some reason, this caused her whole family to go silent. Eventually, they come to terms with it, and as they go to say goodbye, Lachlan shakes hands with her stepdad, and he tells him he understands there's no reason to trust him, but he made a vow to Lark, and he will protect his wife. When they left and got into the car to drive Auntie back off, Lachlan was like, what was the whole deal with the driver's license? Like, why did everyone act like that? And Lark never took the Kovachi last name, not wanting to leave the last piece of her dad. So when she like dropped her new license saying that she changed her name, it was a huge thing because she always vowed that she would always be a Montague. It's been 10 days since the family introduction, and Lachlan and Lark are both getting under each other's skin and like tiptoeing around each other. Like, there's tension. Lark meets Lachlan at his boss Lander Mace's house for the first time, and he's obviously on edge because his boss is a legitimate psycho. She immediately clocks that he is power hungry and evil, and she's like, ugh, I don't like this guy. Auntie Ethel made him handmade muffins especially for him this morning, and they start getting down to business. And even though they're not supposed to negotiate terms, she was like, I'm here to negotiate. And he's like, that was not part of the fucking deal. They finally settle on a $600,000 Montague contract. Plus, she gets unlimited access to the office for investigative resources whenever she wants. She will get him the Kovachi contract once Lachlan is retired. And finally, he says deal and they shake on it. Because she just wants him out from under this guy's grip because she can see that he just like abuses Lachlan whenever he wants.
That's my man.
When Lander gets up, he takes two wobbly steps and then crashes right on his face. He's drugged from Auntie's muffins.
What?
The muffins that she brought him were laced.
Yeah, he was stoked too. He's like, oh my God, I love these muffins. Thank you.
Power move.
And Lachlan was like, you just fucking drugged my boss. And she's like, Aunt Ethel always gets the last word. Sorry.
What can you do? What can you do?
They get into the data room and they do some little FBI digging. And before they get started, Lark looks up the name Lewis Campbell, occupation, education. And when Lachlan asks who that is, she gets out of the screen quickly and doesn't answer his question, choosing to change the subject instead. They get started on their first job, trying to hunt down who's targeting her family. When Lachlan picks her up from Auntie's home, they have a monumental breakthrough moment because he finally gives her a sincere apology. And it's the apology that she's been waiting for since he shoved her in the trunk.
Yeah.
He tells her he doesn't expect her to accept it, and he will do anything he can to earn her forgiveness. And then he tells her to hop in the car because he's got a surprise for her. While they're driving to her surprise, they have like such easy-flowing, yapping conversations, and she feels so carefree. And they pull into a gravel driveway, and it's like a log cabin, and she's like, where the fuck are we? And he took her to a sleep retreat. It's like a sleep therapy spa to help with her insomnia because she's like on the brink of exhaustion.
Cute.
Imagine a sleep retreat. Oh my god.
Don't.
Shelby's like, shut the fuck up. Imagine it.
I literally cream my pants right now. For that.
It's just cozy beds and white noise. Everything's all dim.
And it's nice and toasty.
And no one wakes you up.
Oh my god.
No husbands, no babies.
Ooh. Just a warm glass of milk on your nightstand.
Okay. Gross. Nope, you lost me.
He tells her that he booked this for her all weekend. If it doesn't work, that's fine. They'll find something else that does. And he promises that nothing's going to happen while she's gone. And if anything were to come up, she would be the first person to know and he'll be right there to get her. her. And she's never had someone care for her like this. And in her head, she's like, fuck, this is a marriage of convenience. Like, it's not even real. And she snaps and voices that. And he's like, baby girl, you're my wife. Shitty situation or not, I've made a promise and a vow to take care of you. I'm going to keep it.
Yes, sir.
At nighttime, when Lark calls Lachlan before bed, he tells her to come outside because he has a surprise for her. He can't say where they're going, but he can tell her this retreat is an amazing location and it's a perfect alibi. They pull up to a cabin 30 minutes later and Connor is out front waving. He was there the first night of, like, Budget Batman for Halloween. And before getting out of the car, Lachlan gives her a cute pink toolbox and he tells her she doesn't have to do this and she can walk away at any time. He heads in first and he tells her she can head in once he gives her the bat symbol. He strides in the cabin and he faces a tied up Dr. Lewis Campbell, the headmaster of Ashbourne Collegiate Institute.
That's the name she was looking up in the system.
He interrogates him, asking him why, when all different professors reached out to him via email with concerns about students being assaulted by another professor, that he did nothing. He goes through email after email from worried professors about all different students, and the last two papers he has the students' names of Sloan and Lark. He tells him Lark is his wife and Campbell failed her. Campbell's begging not to be hurt, and he tells Lachlan that the cover-up conversations that he had with the Montagues were recorded, and if he gets killed, everything's going to the FBI. And Lachlan's like, you mean the information in the backups that I now have possession of? When he begs not to be hurt, Lachlan says, that's not up to me, and in walks Lark with her pink toolbox. She tells him that her husband just bought her a present and she's dying to know what's inside. She opens the toolbox and Lark squeals and jumps up and down in happiness. There's glitter, gold star stickers, a needle and gold thread, new knives. Like, what more can a girl ask for?
Oh, nice.
To sleep on her actual sleep retreat. That's what I would ask for. Yeah. Can we do this a different day?
Shelby's like, don't interrupt the sleep.
No.
She decided to sew his mouth shut because sewing is what prompted her to tell Sloan everything. The professor that assaulted her tore her uniform and she needed to sew it back together, but her hands were shaking too bad, so Sloan did it for her, and during that time she told her everything. The next day, he was gone. After she's done stitching his mouth together and happy with her work, she tells him, enjoy hell and tell the devil the Canes send their regards, and then shoots him point blank in the head.
Yeah.
Later in the early morning, once Lachlan gets back home from cleaning the scene, Lark still hasn't slept and she's up, so she gives him a call. They chit-chat on the phone and she asks if he could possibly read to her, maybe hearing a familiar voice will help her sleep. And he ends up reading her the script of her favorite movie ever, Constantine, because she's like obsessed with Keanu Reeves. Like the whole book, she's like drooling over Keanu Reeves. And he like got the script for her and he decided to read it.
I don't see it.
I think Keanu Reeves is hot.
He's fine. I don't know. I just, anytime I think of him, I just picture him in John Wick and I'm like, he's so awkward. I don't know.
But in Point Break, he's hot in Point Break.
I never saw that. Maybe I'll watch it.
As he's reading to her, eventually she falls asleep and he doesn't hang up. He just keeps the phone on speaker in case she wakes up.
That's so cute. I'd hang up.
Me too.
Bye.
I'd be like, oh, thank God.
It's been a week since Lark has been at the sleep clinic, and a man named Abe walks into Lachlan's shop wanting a repair on a saddle, and alarm bells are instantly going off in Lachlan's head. Like, there's something off with this dude. When Lachlan turned his back to get a paper and pen for his order, he swore he heard Abe's boots right behind him, but then the door opens and in comes Lark. When Lachlan turns, Abe's on the other side of the saddle walking towards Lark, ready to introduce himself, which is also fucking weird. Lachlan, not trusting the guy, turns his attention back to the saddle and asks what Abe wants added into the design, and Abe gives him a Bible verse. Lark gets into Lachlan's car while he's finishing up the store, and when it turns on, she's greeted with a nice smutty erotica audiobook that he's been listening to.
Oh.
He starts walking towards the car and she locks the door and turns the volume all the way up so he can hear it playing from outside. And he looks like so mortified. He stops the audiobook from his phone and then she lets him in. And there's like a lot of tension between the two of them right now. Like that was all that was needed. Just a nice sexy erotica.
That'll do it.
They set off to go to a club that Connor found, and it might have a possible connection between her family hit, because there's been money wire transfers when the deaths of her family members have been happening, so it's a possible lead. They scope out the club and they don't see anyone they recognize, but they do register that the tension between them is palpable.
Anyone whose gaze lingers on you a little too long, when I turn my head to the side to meet his eyes, Lachlan's attention fuses to my lips. They curl in a smile.
only you. His lips twitch. There's that fire again. The flame inside him that, if coaxed just right, becomes a beacon in the night. My teasing smile might fade, but the flame between us doesn't.
They head into the office and Lachlan contacts Connor, who like hacks into the cameras and makes them safe. They're looking around and they just take pictures of everything looking for a clue. Lark finds an invoice of $50,000 paid in cash for a contracting company. And as she takes the photo, they hear someone coming towards the office and Lachlan grabs Lark and pulls them both inside a storage closet. And of course, she's claustrophobic, so she's freaking out. But have no fear because her Pookie's there to anchor her and calm her down. She takes Lachlan's hand and puts it on her neck and then puts the other one on her chest like an attempt to ground herself. But with the tension between them two, she wants him. The man who was in the office walks away and closes the door, leaving them alone.
An ache coils low in my belly, a need that stalks me. More and more, it lingers, ready to consume. It's there when Lachlan stumbles out of his room in the morning in a t-shirt and low-slung sweats as he heads to the coffee machine to make us Americanos. It haunts me when his gaze lingers on my lips as I smile. It possesses me when I'm alone in my room at night, staring into the dark as my hand slips beneath my sleep shorts. It's Lachlan's touch I imagine when I circle my clit, when I plunge my fingers into my pussy. I want his touch everywhere. I want it for longer than just a moment that feels stolen in the dark.
Oh my god.
She is bricked up for him.
Yeah, she is. Her clit is boing. Boing.
She goes to kiss him, but he pushes her away. I would kill myself.
I mean, honestly, where's a bridge? Where's a freeway? Something.
What do you mean? You go to kiss your husband and he's like, ugh.
Not now. Are you kidding me? If Andrew were to do that to me now, we're 11 years in. Where's my gun?
Get that Glock, girl.
If it ain't me, baby, it's no one.
He tells her they can't do this, not until he knows she's forgiven him. Otherwise, what they have won't work, and he really wants this to work. As they leave the club, Sloan texts her a link of the news article that their headmaster is dead. And Sloan's like, you know, if you're like me, I wouldn't love you any less. And instead of going downstairs, she heads outside to the balcony to get some fresh air. Lachlan joins her outside and she finally opens up of why she's claustrophobic. They had a home invasion and that's how her father died and why her mom has a limp. Her mom had to hide her and her sister in a cupboard and told them to hide until morning unless they heard the police.
So I don't know if you know this. I know that you don't. But Lark is a singer.
Oh, yeah.
She has a big show coming up. They're both at home and it's before her big show. And Lachlan hands her a box and tells her that he made her a present. She opens it and it's a handcrafted leather harness to wear adorned with gold stars on the straps that crisscross between her breasts. Because he's a leather worker, he made it for her by hand.
Leather and Lark.
He tells her he wants to make this marriage something she can be proud of. He doesn't want to be something she regrets. She tells him she loves it and she's going to wear it tonight at the show. She goes to her room to change and comes out wearing the harness over a sheer black dress, showing a bralette underneath, and Lachlan can barely breathe. He tells her how feckin' sexy she looks.
Feckin'.
Feckin' sexy.
Then she pulls out a small box and hands it to him. She tells him not to open it until she gives him the signal while she's on stage. He says, okay, whatever my duchess wants. And he calls her duchess. They pull up to the venue and it is poppin'. Lachlan asks if she wants him to drop her off while he finds a place to park. And she's like, no, you might have trouble getting in. I'll take you in the back. And he's like, take me in the back, because his mind's in the gutter right now because their sexual tension is just so crazy. And she's like, yeah, the back entrance, you know, the back door.
My back door.
I'll take you in the back door. When she notices he's shifting in his seat, she's like, oh, okay, so you're an ass man. He feels like his dick is going to explode, but they eventually make their way into the venue. But she keeps running with all the backdoor jokes.
I'm pretty sure my skin is melting from the raging blush that heats my flesh. What? Nothing to be ashamed about. Liking a bit of butt stuff. Lark chimes as we walk toward Amigo's Cantina, dipping down an alley to our left toward a metal stage door. Anal is great. I like anal. This one time, I was on the road touring and... before I even realize what I'm doing, I've grabbed Lark's waist and caged her against the brick wall of the building. A spike of fear hits my veins that I could have hurt her, but it's washed away by the look she gives me as I loom over her. Even with the blur at this distance, I can still see it. Flushed skin, blown pupils, a pulse that pounds in her neck, desire. Uh-oh, he loves a butthole.
Yeah.
Loves a butthole. Yeah.
He tells her he cannot bear the thought of hearing about his wife being fucked by another man right now. He leans in close with his erection rubbing against her thigh and tells her it's agonizing knowing it's not him. Then he pulls away, but she grabs him and whispers his name. But then the door swings open and the moment is ruined. It's the bass player letting her know it's time for her to get on stage. She warns Lachlan not to open the box until she gives the signal, or she'll turn his balls into a snow globe, and she walks out. And she means it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would believe her.
She's kind of scary.
He heads out to join the audience, and when Lark comes on stage, the crowd goes wild. It seems like she's a very successful singer.
Okay.
She sings a few songs, and then it's announced that she's performing a brand new original song. She tells the crowd that she wrote it over the last few weeks. It's called Ruinous Love, and it's for someone in the crowd. And remember, this is the Ruinous Love trilogy.
Ah.
Then she starts singing. Lachlan listens to the lyrics, and they're all about him, about how the best things in life come out of the fire and how she'd burn down the world for him. And at the end of the song, there's a verse about how he's been forgiven and she gives him permission. Also, the narrator in the audiobook actually sings this, and it was so cringy at, I listened to it at 2x. So it sounded like the Chipmunks. The song ends and there's a roar of applause. Then Lark looks at Lachlan and signals for him to open the box. He does, and it's a small black remote with a note that says, "Turn me on."
Oh.
There's only a power button and two buttons for up and down. He's confused, so he presses up, 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 up until he sees Lark's face contort on stage, and now he knows exactly what this is. It's a remote for a vibrator that Lark is wearing on the stage.
Cute.
He messes with the settings, and Lark is playing a cello at this point, which I thought was very funny. And he can see that she's getting all flushed and her brows are furrowed, and he knows he's going to be watching her come on the stage in front of all of these people. He edges her for a little bit, thinking about how badly he wants to fuck her, and he's rock hard.
I would give my right arm to see her stride off that stage and drop to her knees at my feet. I want her begging for my cock, to feel the fluttering desperation of her fingers as she fumbles with my belt to free my erection. It strains against my zipper in a painful demand as I picture her stripping me down. I'm desperate to sink into her, to feel how tightly her cunt can grip my cock as she takes me deep into her pussy. I need to see my cum dripping down her thighs so everyone here will know she is my wife. Mine.
He watches her as she lets out a soft moan, and then she makes direct eye contact with him as she comes as discreetly as she can. She takes a bow before she heads off stage, but Lachlan has already booked it out of the audience. Lark has to play an encore, so she goes back on, and she's wondering where the hell her husband is and thinks maybe she scared him off. When it's time to finally head out, she's in tears and she runs to the bathroom backstage to sob. But then Lachlan bursts in asking what the fuck she's doing, and he stalks toward her and tells her he was waiting for her in the dressing room so they could get the fuck out of here so they can go home and he can fuck her. And now she's like, oh, because she thought that he was like, oh, and then was like, bye.
I mean, he pushed her away earlier. I'd feel the same way.
Yeah.
I don't know how she was playing the cello while doing that. I feel like it'd be like...
She's very good.
Half the time when they talk about these people coming, like wearing these wearable vibrators, and they're just doing things, no.
I feel like there's no way.
No. I would stop talking.
All of a sudden, you stop playing the cello and you're like... He asks if she meant what she sang when she said she forgives him, and she says yes. He tells her watching his wife come in front of a crowd of 500 people bothers him in the best and worst of ways. He picks her up and puts her on the bathroom counter and turns the vibrator back on, telling her to show him the toy. She starts to pull up her dress and tells him she wants him. She's not his demure duchess. She's his fucking whore.
Then lift that dress up and fucking prove it. Yeah, whore. Lachlan leans closer. His fingers trace my thighs, spreading them wider without lifting the fabric that pulls between them. His breath floods my face as his lips stop a thread's width from mine. Show me how soaked those goddamn panties are from coming on that stage in front of all those people. Show me how desperate you are to be fucked. Yeah, show him. Show him your wet pussy.
She spreads her legs and leans back as he turns the vibration up more and more. And he tells her that he didn't lock the door, but he isn't going to stop until she screams his name and everyone knows whose fucking whore she is. He rips off her panties and wraps them around her neck, and they go over their safe words. So, like, red to stop, yellow to slow down, green to fuck her and fill her with his cum.
Yeah.
He chokes her with the panties and turns the vibrator up more as she's begging for him to fuck her. But he tells her the first time he fucks his wife won't be in a bar bathroom. So for now, she can come with what he gives her. And she does just that. She comes, but it's not enough. She needs that dick.
Yeah.
Then the bassist, Xander, walks in and Lachlan is like, get the fuck out. Xander scurries away and Lachlan's like, I feckin' hate that guy. Then he says it's time to get out of here. They're going to Pound Town. Lachlan grabs her instruments and Lark goes out to the car before him. But then Abe, remember the guy with the saddle?
Yeah, that weird fuck.
Yeah, he comes up behind her, telling her what a wonderful performance that was. She gets the heebie-jeebies from this guy, but he's gone just as quickly as he arrived. And thankfully, he's gone before Lachlan showed up. While they're driving home, Lachlan is getting pissed because Lark is taking the scenic route and even stops at the gas station for snacks and ice. And Lachlan is just sitting there with blue balls. Like, she's purposefully not driving home because he's just sitting there with a raging boner. She thinks this is hilarious, and he tells her this won't be so feckin' funny when she's gagging on his cock.
Nice. Nice Irish accent.
Thank you.
I lean closer, and her breath hitches. My eyes fuse to her mouth as a smile sneaks across my lips. You like that, don't you? You want me filling your throat. You want to swallow every drop of cum like my good fucking whore. Don't worry. You will. And then you're going to beg me for more, won't you? I chuckle as her lips part and the sweet scent of her breath floods my senses. She nods. That's what I thought. I lean closer, just enough for my lips to graze Lark's as I whisper, drive. I have a boner. Drive.
She speeds home and he snags her right up out of the car and carries her inside. Then it's game on. They start making out all the way to the bedroom. Lark is ready to go, but Lachlan sits down in the chair in the corner and tells her to show him how much she wants it. He commands her to take the dress off but leave the harness on. He asks what she is and she says, you're whore. So he tells her to get on her hands and knees and prove it. She obeys and then he pulls out his pocket knife and tells her to crawl. She crawls up to him and he commands her to pull his cock out. She obeys again and then he tells her to spit on it and stroke it. She does and then she takes him into her mouth. He reminds her about the safe words and then begins to fuck her face.
There's nothing like turning a perfect princess into a fucking slut. I grit out as I pick up a rhythm of deep thrusts. I bet your pussy is so wet it's dripping down your thighs. Lark whimpers. Take your fingers and show me. Lark drags her hand down her body as I continue the cadence of thrusts, each one hitting the back of her throat as she moans and whimpers. Her eyes flutter closed as she touches herself, and then she brings her hand between us, the proof of her desire glistening across her fingers. With my free hand, I capture her wrist and bring her fingers to my waiting mouth and suck. Sweet and salty, her flavor coats my tongue and I nearly lose my goddamn mind.
He pops his dick out of her mouth and then throws her on the bed and starts to chow down. He edges her a little bit and then slides up to slide on in. He fucks her hard and fast until they both come. They snuggle a bit and then it's time for round two. Lachlan gets up when they're all done and he takes the doggy out to go potty. And when he gets back, Lark is fast asleep. He falls asleep next to her, but he wakes up and she's not in bed. She's in the kitchen making breakfast for her hubby. He sees that she's throwing bacon down for Bentley and he's like, for the love of God, please stop feeding him people food. His farts are rancid. And she's like, LOL, that wasn't Bentley. It was the dead guy in my coffee table.
Surprise.
He tells her sometimes he forgets that he's married to a multiple deleter. That's what she calls serial killers.
Okay.
They eat breakfast and take a shower where he fucks her once more. Then they head over to Leander's to talk business, but Leander seems a little too focused on Lark. So Lachlan pulls her away and is like, we need to start branching out. Let's start looking at people your family wouldn't suspect. Maybe someone in the inner circle. And she's like, well, there's Stan Tremblay. He's the one who helped clean up after Sloan, you know, at the school when Sloan killed the professor that was sexually assaulting her. Yeah,
that's right.
But also, she's pretty sure that would be a dead end. She doubts it's him. Lachlan warns her not to trust anyone and to listen to her instincts. So she's like, okay, let's look into him. They do a little sleuthing on Stan in Leander's office computer, but they're both shocked to find out that he's already dead. He was murdered. They head home and Lark tells him how scared she is about everything and how it's all panning out. But Lachlan assures her that she is the bravest person he knows. And then they start to smooch in. But when he starts diddling her, she's pretty sore from their last round. But then he starts finger blasting her. And then he grabs an ice cube from a glass on the coffee table and uses it on her nipples. She's ready to go, and he tells her she'd better get ready for him to fuck her like a whore. He pops the ice cube in his mouth and goes down on her, and she loves it. Then he scoots up her body and thrusts all the way in.
So fucking perfect, Lachlan says as he gives my ass a gentle slap. When I cry out with need, he does it again and then soothes my skin with a gentle caress. He separates my ass cheeks and groans. That fucking perfect ass, that tight little hole. The ice slides down my ass crack, and I swear under my breath as he runs it across the pleated rim. The pleated rim?
Yeah. A fancy little anus.
Yeah.
Then he spits on her butthole and starts finger blasting that. He hands her the ice cube and tells her to use it to touch herself while he fucks her. They come together, and then he pulls out and watches the cum drip out of her. He scoops it out with his finger and pushes it into her asshole.
What is with men and doing that?
She showers while he cooks dinner, and when they're done eating, they head to Connor's garage. He's going to guide them on how to break into Stan's home vault. Because remember, he's the tech guy. Lachlan tries to dissuade Lark from tagging along, but she's not having it and says they have a better chance of getting in and out quickly if she tags along to help. They head to the medical examiner's office first to get some stuff that could be useful to get into the vault at Stan's. Because remember, Stan was murdered. He is dead.
You're right.
Connor uses his gear to let them know when the building is empty, and then they're in. They wind up in one of the coolers, and they find the cold, dead body of Stan Tremblay. Lark cuts off his index finger and thumb and plops it into a plastic bag that Lachlan is holding for her. Now, it's time for the gross part. Stan has an iris scanner at his house, and they have to scoop out his eyeball.
Aw, Stan.
Lark thinks this part is fucking disgusting and doesn't know how Sloane does this. Because remember, Sloane, like,
loves the eyeball.
She's the orb weaver.
That's right. Yeah. I do remember that.
And Lark is legit gagging. Lachlan is gagging. It's nasty. It's goopy.
Just imagine it's marble, Connor chimes, or one of those trolley glotzer marshmallow gummy eyeball candies. Ew. Have you seen those? Gabs loves those things. They're filled with red sour liquid shit. I gag again as Lachlan releases a string of expletives, some of which might be in Irish, though I can barely make out his words over the blaring alarm and the heartbeats roaring in my ears. Don't bring up food, you feckin' gobshite. Bloody hell.
Finally, they get the eyeball out and put it in a jar with formalin. Then they book it out of the building as they hear sirens in the distance. Then we get a POV from the Phantom. He killed Stan and is currently watching Aunt Ethel sleeping. She wakes up and is like, "Who the fuck are you?" She knows exactly why he's here and asks if he was sent by Bob Foster, but he doesn't know who that is. He asks her if she repents before the judgment of the Lord and commands her to confess her sins before she goes to meet him.
I regret not having gone home with Spencer Jones after Marcy's party when I was 23. Jenny Bright took him home instead and said he ate her ass six ways to Sunday. She wouldn't shut up about it at brunch at the country club for a solid month. Lord thy God, I seek refuge in you from the devil. I met my Thomas shortly after, and in 62 years of marriage, he never once ate my ass. Took me nearly a year to convince Tom there were more positions than just me lying flat on my back like a dead fish.
Auntie Ethel wants to, like, be a freak.
Yeah, she's a freak in the sheets.
The Phantom legit thinks to himself that this woman is the devil. Like, he's appalled at what she is saying right now.
Disgusting.
She can tell she's pissing him off and just smiles at him. He grabs a couple of syringes and injects them into her port, a lethal dose of lorazepam. He's Harvey's brother. And remember, Harvey...
He was like that really fat guy, right?
Yeah.
Yucky.
Was he the one with the mom where she's like, "You're a bad boy"? Yeah. He's here to avenge his death and get revenge on Rowan Kane for killing his brother. He starts to sing Aunt Ethel a hymn, and she's like, "Oh my God, please stop." But then the drugs start to kick in, and her last words are, "Touch my Lark, and he'll kill you." The next day, Lark gets the call from her mom. She's distraught, even though she knew this day was coming sooner rather than later. Then she immediately calls Lachlan, and as soon as he picks up, he knows there's something wrong, and she tells him that Auntie Ethel is dead and wants him to meet her at the funeral home. He asks if there's anything he can do, and she says right now, she just wants a hug. Then he tells her he loves her, and she says it back.
Cute.
Love.
She smooches Bentley and heads to the bathroom to wash her face before she leaves, but then she hears Bentley barking menacingly from the living room. She walks out and sees Abe standing in her living room. She gets whacked in the head and goes down. Then Bentley yelps, and a needle is stabbed into her neck.
Not the dog.
I know, not the dog. Rest in peace.
He died?
Lachlan gets to the funeral home and all of Lark's family's already there, but not her. He shoots her a text asking if everything's okay, and he tells her family that she had told him she was heading straight here, and he immediately feels like something is off. He calls her and she doesn't answer. Then his phone rings, but it's not Lark, it's Connor. He just got done looking through Stan's videos. He sends it to Lachlan and sees a man standing over Stan's body holding a weapon that looks familiar. He recognizes this man. It's Abe, and that weapon is from Lachlan's shop. He's speeding through the lobby, giving Abe's description over the phone to Connor, when the receptionist is like, oh, are you talking about Steve? He was our temp. He left about an hour ago. They had some people out sick yesterday, so Steve was filling in for them. Now, all the pieces are clicking together. Rose and Fionn, do you remember? Fionn is Lachlan's brother, right? And Rowan's other brother. Yeah. So Rose and Fionn meet Lachlan at the apartment, and he fills them in as they walk in. Blood is everywhere, and Bentley is wounded and crying on the ground. And he orders Fionn to save him, because Fionn's a doctor, right?
Yeah, he's a doctor.
They shave Bentley up and see that he's been stabbed. They do what they can to stop the bleeding until they can get him to the emergency vet. Lachlan is spiraling about how he wasn't here for her, and then he's filled with rage. He gets up to take care of business, but Rose is like, I'm coming with you. Lachlan has a brain blast, and they run across the street to investigate the apartments that have a view of Lark's place. They find the one that would have the best vantage point, and they break in. They know they have the right place immediately. There are Bible verses all over the wall, and then they find an old ticket to Lark's show. He calls Connor to get the details on Abe, but Connor does some sleuthing, and that's when they find out he's Harvey's brother. Lark wakes up in a dark room with a screaming headache. The light switches on, and she realizes she's in a batch oven, because remember, Auntie Ethel runs a bakery, so she's in a giant oven.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, terrifying.
And Abe is standing outside the window, and he starts reciting Bible verses to her. He shows her his arm covered in blood. Bentley got him good.
Good.
She tries asking why he's doing this to her. Did she kill someone important to him? He laughs and is like, I was going after Lachlan, but then you walked into his shop that day and I knew what I needed to do. Then Abe turns around and she can hear him tell someone to drop the weapon and they can save her life. If they don't, everyone dies. Lachlan's here. Abe has a timer set on the oven to turn on in 5 minutes. And also, there's a bomb set to detonate on Rowan's car, and Rowan and Sloan are currently on vacation in wine country. He also has a pre-drafted email that will incriminate Lachlan in every single one of the murders. Lachlan tries to call his bluff, but Abe is like, I've been following you guys for months. Believe what you want to believe, but is it a risk you're willing to take? So Lachlan hands over his gun. Abe grabs it and tells Lachlan he can either save his wife or his brother, but not both.
That's so fucked up.
Lark screams at him to save Rowan, but Lachlan is trying to pound down the oven door, but to no avail. Then there's a scuffle, a gunshot, and the oven fans turn on. Rose bursts in, but the oven door is locked. Lark starts cooking.
What the fuck?
And Lachlan shoots out the oven window. They get her out and she can see Abe laying dead on the ground with a gunshot wound to the head. Rose shoots a text to Rowan and Sloan to warn them about the bomb. They're safe and won't go near the car until someone comes out to check it. Lachlan snatches Lark up and holds her tight, telling her she's his wife and he'll never let her go. Now we're in the epilogue. Bentley, poor sweet boy.
He's alive.
He made a full recovery.
Yeah, bitch.
And Lachlan is officially retired from Leviathan. He gifts Lark a special secret safe hidden behind her Constantine poster, and it's filled with all of her trophies, plus an extra. Dr. Lewis Campbell's heart encased in resin and suspended in gold wire.
Ooh.
Then she sees some documents. It's an itinerary for their honeymoon trip to Indonesia, but that's not all. He also gave her divorce papers.
What?
He wants her to choose the future she wants with him. She isn't stuck with him, and he wants her to choose him because she wants to, not because she has to. She rips up the divorce papers and tells him she's madly in love with him. And also, she's regular mad. Don't ever do that again.
Yeah, I agree.
She crashes a kiss on him and tells her, of course she chooses him. Lachlan kisses his wife and chooses love. The end. Also, there's a bonus chapter where Lark pegs Lachlan while they're on their honeymoon. She has the ripped up divorce papers set up on the bed and tells him she's going to fuck him on these papers so he never forgets who he belongs to.
Fuck me until I'm spraying cum all over these feckin' papers. I run my palm across Lachlan's ass before I give it a sharp slap. Such a good boy. I coo as I tilt the bottle of lube to let the first thick drops land on his ass crack. With my hands on his smooth skin, I separate his ass cheeks and maneuver my hips to drag the tip of the dildo through the viscous liquid. Are you sure you're a good boy, though? With one hand, I grip the toy and press it to the puckered hole, massaging the tight ring of muscle, circling it until the lube spreads and I feel him start to relax. Yes, he hisses. Really? Or are you my fucking whore? I press the tip of the dildo to the pleated hole, keeping the pressure on until it slips past the resistance. Lachlan cries out with a sensation, dropping his head to his arm as I move with him, keeping the end of the dildo lodged in his ass. Wow, Peggy.
Yeah.
I hate seeing other people live my dreams.
She asks him for a color and he says, green. She slaps his ass as she fucks him, then reaches around to give him a handy. He comes all over the divorce papers. She pops the dildo out of him and then he flips her around because now it's her turn. The end.
Wow. That's a good one. I like that one. I like Lark a lot.
How many red pepper emojis do you give this one?
I think I give it 4.5.
And what did everybody rate it on Goodreads?
I gave it a 4.
I gave it 4, but I would say like 4.5 or 4.25. I think I gave it 4.25 on Fable. But I liked it better than Butcher and Blackbirds because their banter was cuter, I think. And I liked that Lachlan was like a big golden retriever, even though he looked scary.
Yeah.
Yes. I also gave it a 4.25 on Fable. I liked it. I think I liked Butcher and Blackbird more just because they were both serial killers and it was like a competition between the two of them.
Yeah, that was cool.
All right. And next week, we're telling Riley all about Heated Rivalry by Rachel Reed. And we're going to have her look at the cover and give us her best guess on what it might be about.
Okay. Well, you have two hockey players on the cover. They're both boys and they're like staring at each other. And there's a quote on it from somebody that says, the book that got me into hockey romance, Heated Rivalry. You know what? I think it's just going to be dudes banging. I think it's going to be a hockey player on this team and a hockey player on that team. They're going to have a heated rivalry.
Right. Right.
And they're going to kind of like, I guess, enemies to lovers, essentially. They're going to be like, fuck you. No, fuck you. And then
fuck you.
Yeah.
And fuck then I'm going to fuck you.
And essentially, yeah. And then they just build a very like close bond. And that's that. How'd I do?
Pretty good. It was basically the general gist of the book. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like easy. Enemies and lovers, which we love.
Ooh, yes. We do love that.
All right. Well, if you liked this episode, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe.
Follow us on Instagram at @SmutUpAndListenPodcast and on TikTok at @SmutUpAndListen.
Tell your friends, but not your mom. And we'll see you later, you horny little rats.
Bye.